Hello and welcome back to the Between Dreams podcast. My name is Chris and we don't have a tagline anymore. We were just talking about it and we decided that we don't need a tagline because we're going to explore a real conversation. Today's guest is Kyle Kesterson.
Thank you for having me and thank you for saying my name right.
We did. That's the new tagline. We're the anti-tagline tagline.
I think that's as valid as anything.
And it's interesting because we were just talking, but right before we started recording this, I was trying to find a tagline for what this is so that if someone's joining us for the first time, that they know that this is part of a thing. And we kind of
started riffing, started going with it. And you're like, wait a second, there's some nuggets in here. Yeah. And actually, even before we get started and getting started, I should have done this before we started recording, but I just want to ask you.
Oh, boy.
Is it okay? Do I have your permission to fail? And whatever it means, because we don't know where this is going.
Yeah.
But just to play and try something out, and if it completely flops, and what is... I guess failure is that nobody wants to watch this episode. So do we have permission to fail?
I think that's what the point is. That's why we're doing podcasts, right?
Some people are really terrified to fail.
Yeah.
Like some people try to stay as far away from failures as possible. And one of the things that's come from, I've been doing a lot of traveling this last year.
Yeah.
And one of my new daily rituals is to start the day giving myself permission to fail.
Yeah.
And both is every day, the definition of what failure looks like is different, but just knowing that I have the permission to figure out where my threshold is to try something and completely bomb, it allows me to step that much further into the possibility of my day. So
do you think there's this thing that I've seen it so, I feel like it's more and more becoming a thing of this like glorified failures though, where people are like, oh, I don't sleep, I hustle, I do this. Mm. And there's this failure thing that's like, where people are like, oh, I tried so hard that I, and is that encouraging that,
I think that's
struggle. I've written a little essay, I think, about this, or a Facebook post at least, giving myself more credit. It was an essay, it's a Facebook post, about this, like the glorification of the starving artist mindset.
I think in those circumstances, people are giving themselves permission to set themselves up for failure.
Oh.
And I think that's different.
That is different.
Because if you're not honoring your... paying attention to what your body's telling you or your mind is telling you or what your heart is telling you or what your soul is telling you. You're like, no, I'm laser focused and I'm just going to grind because Gary Vee tells me to grind, 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 grind. And that's success. You're setting yourself up to failure.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is to say, like, for example, skiing, first thing that popped into my head. When I go skiing, if I'm like, if I haven't crashed today, that means I didn't push to my boundaries far enough. If I were a juggler, I'd be like, what have I not tried that's so crazy that I'm just going to do it until I completely mess that up and fail? Because then I know that I'm actually reaching my thresholds for where I've been pushing myself, or it allows me to go in a completely new direction. I feel like as craftsmen, we figure out like, I'm going to get and perfect myself in this craft. And so we get super laser focused and we practice like... I mean, I've seen you perform, I don't know how many times, and you nail it every single time because you've like drilled that like rut in that groove of what it is to throw things around and have coordination so many times.
Describing it as a rut is
kind
of funny.
It is a rut. Think about driving down a path so many times that you formed a groove. Let's call it a groove, not a rut. But sometimes it becomes a rut. How do you get out of that and explore a new path because it's all you know how to do? Right. Yeah. So if you give yourself a chance to fail, it's like, what happens if I get out of my groove, go down a path that I've never carved down before, and just, I wonder where this goes.
Yeah. And somebody was, speaking of the groove and the rut, I was talking to somebody last night at this little hangout that I was at, and they asked about like how much I practice every day. And everyone, so it's been this interesting thing because I never set out to be a highly technical juggler. I never really had an interest in that. And it's been more and more everyone that sees me and now has been performing around LA a lot. So people have seen me like multiple times and they're like even jugglers and stuff. They'd be like, I've never seen you make a mistake.
Hmm.
Or like people say, like, because I've done like 100 booby traps, and they're like, I've seen you at like 30 of these, and I've never seen a juggler like not drop something during a set. Hmm. And this is a recurring theme that if people aren't here for the first time have heard before, and it sounds obnoxious, but I got a lot better at technical juggling when I stopped caring about juggling. The only thing that I care about is audience experience of them being like, oh, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like an insult if people were like, oh, that was good. How much do you practice? So I don't want the juggling to be a thing. And so to come back to what your question was, open to failure, I don't care if I drop. I don't care if I fail as a juggler. And now the perception of me as a juggler is like, you're the best juggler I've ever seen. You've never made a mistake because I'm willing to get out of that. Like, because I don't care if I drop. So I stop dropping.
So I want to actually pick that apart a little bit in that, you know, you expressed it as technical juggling, right? And so now you've become a master technical juggler.
Well,
and I'm just gonna like frame that for
jugglers
a moment.
Jugglers are not gonna be happy.
No, I know. No, just in the sense like you've perfected the performance in the sense of like you didn't drop anything, people walk away wowed.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. And you keep trying crazier things. What I want to play with is, first of all, we can take the analogy of like what juggling is. So to everyday people, at the end of the day, everybody's a juggler. Yeah. I'm juggling my kids, I'm juggling my work, I'm juggling somebody sick, I'm juggling this, I'm juggling that. Like, we use the analogy of being jugglers in our everyday lives all of the time, right? And so when somebody goes and actually sits and watches somebody who does a formal, technical, artistic type of juggling, this is the... where I want to go with this is, like, as you were talking, I was thinking about, like, showing up as the audience member, how it can start to come to life even more. Like, yeah, you're providing a sense of experience that's novel and new for people that have never seen you before. What is it to add a completely new dimension to it? And we'll call this dimension story. In the sense of, like, how do you show, like, what does it look like to show up and tell a story while you're juggling to the point where people no longer see balls and boxes and you standing on a ball and juggling knives or whatever it is that you're juggling? Those things, through the way you tell the story, changes the perception of what it is you're actually juggling to the point they can see themselves doing what you're doing because they're making parallels into what they're doing day to day. And I want to play with this for a moment because I'm just going to keep for a moment in the sense of, like, if you could, so you start your routine with a couple balls and you say the thing like, you know, oh yeah, that's why, you know, no audience reaction. So that's why I then went into boxes. And like what you're doing is you're elevating the, technicality, the difficulty, right? The things that you end up doing under the legs and behind that. I'm like, all of those things you've shown that you can juggle more and it's harder and you're still nailing it. And the parallel to that is like somebody who could say, you know, I go to work and I clock in my 8 hours and I sit at a check stand and I do this and then I go home and then I have to deal with this and that and the other thing. But you can escalate what it is to be juggling in your personal life to the point I feel like it all becomes fear-based at the end of the day. This is actually what I'm getting to. In the sense of you're trying really hard not to drop something. You don't have a fear of dropping something, but you're trying really hard not to drop something so that a successful performance is that you didn't drop something, right? And that somebody walked away wowed. But what if somebody in their own personal life, like everybody's keeping everything going because they are afraid of like what happens if that person who needs me, who's sick, one of the things I'm juggling, I'm not there for them? Or what if I'm not able to show up and do my work today? Or what if I can't feed my kids today? Or like, what if all these big what ifs or little what ifs that we're juggling, what happens if we drop the ball? Most people feel like their life, like they'll suffer,
right?
Like their life ends. Like we kind of have that emotional reflex of like, my life will be over.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of like, walk away and let them all fall at the same time and just kind of like show the world that it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, what lives on the other side of fear? I'll end with that question.
Yeah. And as you started with the thing of what are you open to, like, however you worded that, like the possibility of fit, like,
is it okay to fail?
Is it okay to fail? And I was just listening to somebody talk about it, of like, what's the worst that could ever happen? And like, if you're trying to start, like, launch a business or something, or just like go follow a dream or something. And somebody was like, well, what if you end up like losing the money that you saved up? And then a lot of times, like, the worst case scenario,
it's not that bad,
is like, well, okay, that's going to suck
emotionally,
but like,
yeah,
it'll be okay. Like, it's actually like devastating. Like, it'll be like, okay, well, I still have like me and my thoughts and the lessons that I learned from that to go on to the next thing.
Well, and I feel like the big emotional fallout of that is like, oh, I'm not capable enough to do it on my own. I need somebody. And the irony is that in most of our day-to-day lives, we don't even have the opportunity to show up for each other to show you, like, I actually am never going to let you fall because I'm here to catch you, but you keep handling it, so you don't even know that I love you.
Yeah.
Because you're not even creating that space. Finding the opportunity to ask for help is a gift in and of itself, you know? But we get caught up directly on, like, what's the thing that we're focused on. We don't even get to see what is potentially trying to enter into our lives because our peripheral vision is like, ain't nobody got time for that.
All right. So
have we started the podcast yet?
I don't know. I'm not sure. We're halfway done.
So sweet. Thanks for tuning in.
Whether we started or not. So for people who have even less idea why you're here now, after that, you were a previous guest on the podcast before we had cameras. Well, we had cameras because also we did a tour on my YouTube channel, which you might be watching this on right now. There was a van tour that you live in and travel around and explore things. And thanks for making me some Google dollars, by the way.
Sweet. This is how you're buying my drink.
Yeah. If you haven't seen that video, go check it out on the channel.
Get a little taste of van life.
It has over 100,000 views. Are you which
serious?
Is great on, wow. Like, by far, like, I get like 100 views
on some videos. Of the other videos.
Yeah.
It's a right time, right thing.
And you know, funny because I tried to duplicate the success of that video by doing other van, because I like vans as well. So I wasn't like just doing it because like, oh, this works, I'm going to go sell out and make more videos.
But it's
like
good
this.
To know.
But I was like, oh, I'm interested in this and it works, so I'll try more. And none of them caught
the same way.
It was an exponential decrease in popularity of the videos. Like, yours has like 120,000 or something. Then the next one has like, it's literally like it like a perfect exponential fall. It was like 100,000, 10,000, 1,000, and like the last one I did has like 400 views. it just straight up died. Like,
that
in is perfect.
Yeah, how do you?
It's a perfect graph of just a plane crashing into the ground
of its own kind of failure. But it's good to be able to, like, process of elimination, at least see the things that we think make something a success. We try to create a linear path back to that, and it's,
I wonder if I failed because I was trying to chase like this thing that worked instead of,
there's
like,
only one Bromf.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the name of it, man.
Anyway, so let's get into some more of your specific thoughts of, because you have a lot of interesting viewpoints of like what. So you decide, how long have you been traveling with minimal amount of things? And how did that, what was that decision to say, I'm going to just like eliminate almost everything and live on the bare essentials that are needed? And now you have the freedom to do a lot. Like, I think about that a lot because, as you see in this, on the other side of this
whole
perfectly curated set, there's just stuff everywhere, and it's like clutter.
And it's well-organized clutter. I'll give them that.
Feel like that holds me back of like, oh, I'm like attached to these piles of things and it would be hard for me to move somewhere because I have all this crap piled up. Yeah. What, talk about the freedom of eliminating stuff and where that, like what that means to you.
I'll give the time remaining version because that's a, there's a lot of off ramps on that journey. But where I started was, you know, I was working really hard to check off the boxes to achieve what I had defined as success in my own. I had a software startup building these storytelling tools, and I took an investment down in Las Vegas, living in Seattle at the time, and I left and I moved down to be a part of this community. And the super short version of it is that once I got rooted down there, I got a big house. I started filling it up full of stuff. Everything was a lot cheaper down there. It was a lot easier to do. But at the same time, I started spending a lot more time, just adventuring because now I was in the Southwest and there's canyons and like, it's just so accessible and easy to go play out there.
Yeah.
So I would start to leave and the more time I would spend outside, the more time I just wanted to be outside and I could work from the road behind a laptop at that time. And so I started doing longer and longer and longer road trips. And those road trips, I would then figure out like, what do I need to take on a week-long, two-week-long, month-long, four-month-long road trip? And so I put these little boxes on top of a, I had a Jeep at the time. And in my, you know, it was like a sleeping bag, some kitchen stuff, some clothes, you know, and then just some of my creative stuff, a lot of photography gear and computer stuff. But it would all fit nice and neat, and I would spend all this time out there, and it literally was all that I needed to be out there exploring and like, living a very fulfilling life, just adventuring. But the more time that I spent out there being wowed by nature, the more like nature was also like had me in session. You know, like it was like, hey, now we're going to open up and teach you some fundamental truths just because you're out here paying attention, slowing down time, getting rid of like the clutter and the noise and the light pollution. This like little learning started seeping in.
What was the, when did you realize that happened? What was that first thing of like, whoa?
I was in Rhyolite outside of Nevada. It's like on the other side of.
It's interesting. There was no, before you get into that, of how there was not even a hesitation of like, well, it was like a clear,
oh,
there
I
was
remember
a moment. And I knew there was going to be because like that, because you can feel that when there's like a change.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, I think. Interesting. Yeah.
Both literal and metaphorical forks in the road. So I was out in Rhyolite during the Perseid meteor shower and nobody was out there. Nobody. And the moon was a new moon and it had already set. And so there was zero light pollution. So I'm sitting there underneath the Milky Way in a way that opened up. Like, I think there's about six stars here in LA. So in most places, like you look at the sky and it feels like a dome, like it feels two dimensional. You get far enough out there and sit there and stare long enough, it goes from this to this. And all of a sudden you see how things are placed in front of another infinitely back. And there's just this, we can see photos and videos, we can read about these things, we can process what it means to be small, what it means to be a part of something grand, but to be out there, it bypasses what you're like, you don't even know what you're processing at the time. And I swear to God, it like changes you on a cellular level. It just becomes this like visceral knowing that we are infinitesimally small. And it's just that immediate, like, oh my God, it's real now that I understand that none of this matters. Like we are here and gone. And then I started just looking at like, what am I getting so stressed out about that feels like it's such a big deal?
Right.
And when I would eventually come back home, I came back to this house full of stuff that I hadn't been using for months. And then I'm like, why do I own all this stuff again? Like, why do I have that? Why do I have that? And I didn't stop with the question. I used the question as a doorway. I asked it and I walked through the doorway to discover where does the need come from to need these things, to own these things, and just started picking apart, like, what's the definition of success? Where did I get my definition of success? Because turns out I was not creating my own definition. I was living into definitions that had been provided for me through stories passed down, through stories retold through our culture, through our parents, you know, through the media, through whatever it is, all these reflections and definitions of what it means to achieve, what it means to be seen and validated and feel worthy and connected and accepted and all of these things. I just like broke it all apart and then took a look at the blueprints and look at my life and look at the blueprints. I'm like, okay, I'm going to make some conscious adjustments here. So living in a van and stripping down all of my stuff was just my way of accessing what I define success. You know, that's the short version of it.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's so, I feel so attached to, because I'll have like things that are like attached to a memory, I guess, or something where I'm like, oh, this would be cool if I had like, it's like a, this might sound worse than it is, I don't know. But I'll be like, well, this would be cool because like later in 100 years, it would be cool for people to like see these things that I created. And then I'm like, you think about like a 14-year-old right now, like they don't know who Elvis is. And you're like, well, he did the sweetest stuff ever.
So I'd also then just, like, so
no one cares.
If you think about it, like,
so why does
the way that you're describing it, the way that it builds up in my mind is like, we're all trying to build the houses that contain our lives.
Yeah.
And so we start with the foundation. We start with the base, like the ground floor, saying, here's what I need in my life. And a lot of people have a need to achieve things, to leave a legacy, to leave a mark, so to know that their work is being seen and felt in the world, right?
Yeah.
And most people then build their entire house and their entire identity and their entire life on top of what they've defined as like, oh, I want to achieve these things. I want the things framed on my wall. I want the statues, like, because that means that the work that I'm doing is successful. It's materialized in the world and it's being seen and felt.
You just pointed to my wall of achievements. this.
They're great achievements, by the way. They truly are.
Literally pointed to, like, subconsciously, you pointed to my wall of Guinness World Records and like TV appearance things.
To make a point in that we.
That's all I have.
You have more than that. But what we don't do, what we're not taught to do, is go underneath the floorboards into the basement to say, where did the moments, what moments happened in our life that created those needs to begin with? Why do I have the need to own the thing, to frame the thing, to do whatever? Like, where did that story come from in the first place? Rather than we just live into the stories that we're born into and that we tell and tell each other, what's underneath it? What are the moments that happened in your life that caused that need, you know,
yeah,
and aspiration?
And there's absolute, and as we talked about this before we started rolling, in that I was like, I always said this kind of the same thing. I was like, oh, I wanted to do it because I thought it was going to, or like talking about the Guinness World Records, I was like, oh, that's going to be like a thing that people are going to book me more, or people are going to care, or when people come over, it's going to be like a talking point. And right when I first hung them up, I actually got like disappointed because like a few people like came over and like I noticed that like people just like kind of glanced, like they didn't even like notice it or say anything. Mm. And I was like getting not hurt by it, but I was
but
just,
you had
like,
an expectation that this
like,
would.
Oh, I thought people were going to like start asking me questions about this. And there was such a, I was doing it for like the, not more, I was going to say the novelty of it, but it was way more than the novelty. It was like, that was like part of the identity, my identity was like trying to have these accomplishments.
Yep.
But I think that to answer, so I'm going to try to do that on myself right now of like what's, I have built a lot of my foundation on that. Like, oh, I have accomplishments. I've tried to get on TV and like, because professionally that like, does help, like my professional, my career world, like does help that I have like appearances on Ellen, and
there is a machine that responds that, like, to these inputs.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But even that like doesn't lead to more bookings. Like people are just like, okay, well, now what? Like it didn't turn. I had the same thing with that. I was like, oh, what's gonna happen now? And then it was like, after you do a TV appearance, like the next day, you're sitting here like refreshing your email. I'm sitting here refreshing my email and no one's calling me. So it was like, that's a really great thing, because some people do say that, like, oh, well, it's easy for you because you have TV appearances, you have Guinness World Records, or you have a van, you have already got the van. Like, how am I going to get the van?
How do you top that?
There's
how do you
comments on our YouTube video that people are like talking trash because you have like a nice van. And people are like, yeah, I could live in a luxury van too. I'm like, okay, it's not, you know, just like people are like, because they live in like a 1978 Chevy van that they're like better. It goes back to the struggling artist thing of like the glorified thing. And
yeah, we have a sense of perception that either luxury is going to create a sense of calm and ease and we'll be able to sleep easier at night. Yeah. All of a sudden we can breathe easier because we now have things that are shiny or clean or soft or whatever it is. The irony is that the more comfort we have, the less we grow, right? Like, it's only through stress, like, that we're able to figure out where our thresholds are that we can... I mean, I was about to go down the route of, like, talking about what it is to grow, but I think we have a sick obsession with growth. You know, like, why is it not okay to just be? Why is it not okay to... Like, how many people can't step away from the doing? They don't even know what to do themselves. Yeah. They have like 3 days to not do, and all of a sudden they either feel guilty, like they're not consciously focusing on the problem that they're trying to solve. They're not improving. They're not getting the next thing. And because they're not moving themselves forward, they're not doing something right, you know? And that's the big hairy lie. And if you look at what people are defining success, how they spend their time and then they focus, like right now I'm hosting a couple different groups through the coaching that I do. And what I'm helping people try to do is both improve their quality of life, but also their trajectory. And everything is project oriented. Everything is work based. Mm-hmm. Like, the thought is that if I can just stay focused and check this thing off, then 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 I'm going to be doing it right. You know? Yeah. And I like to go, okay, well, let's map out what are your goals. Let's break that down into tasks. Let's get really tactical and clear and not try to hold things in the brain and eat up all your resources just trying to navigate that every day. Let's see the map. Let's see the blueprints. But since we're here, let's ask some bigger questions, you know? And so I also like to like pay attention to how people use language, but asking bigger questions like, you know, like we were just talking about, like, what does it mean that these things are done? One of my favorite things to do is a graveyard meditation. And as I've been traveling, so I don't know if you know this, but this last year from June to June was 19 countries and 22 states in 1 year. And so one of the things that I started doing was going and visiting graveyards in a lot of the places that I was traveling to, just to kind of see how different cultures honor death and what it means. But I'd spend enough time in there where I call it a meditation, but you walk around long enough and your perception of what is happening starts to shift. This has happened a few times where I'll walk around just kind of floating through, and eventually it kind of clicks to where I'll look over and it'll be like, oh, that's my grave. I'm buried there. Oh, there's my parents. Oh, and all my friends. Everybody that I've ever met and know, I'm surrounded by. And there's this kind of like transportation in the future moment where you're just sitting there and you can kind of believe it for a moment that this is it. This is all what it came down to. Who's visiting you? Or what am I stressed out about right now? For? Like, what did it all amount to? Why did it matter all of what I was doing when this is what it amounts to, and you're looking at a headstone?
So the question of that is, is that inspiring to people or I don't know, is that like a, so sometimes I think about that for myself too. I'm like, I got, again, maybe going back to this stuff thing. I'm like, I had all this stuff that I think is important, or like these accomplished, or like a video, or like a cool photo, then I'm like, it's on a hard drive that's not going to be able to be read in 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, like, I'm just like, oh, well, I feel like this is so important. Like, I had this moment that was like a live show or this cool photo or something. And the one thing that I struggle with is like, oh, I like this, like, documenting this thing, and I'm like, oh, this is important. And it was like, oh, these like conversations are important because they're going to live on forever. And it again goes back to that thing, like huge famous people that were famous like 30 years ago, just it's gone, like there's no thing there. And which I guess there's a choice there of like, that's like hugely disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that's hugely disappointing when your foundation, as you were saying, is built on these like accomplishments that I think that are so important. But if I said that my foundation was, instead of being on these like plaques on the wall and YouTube videos and like these things that I like can create and build upon and do this thing, if instead my foundation is built on like thinking about this conversation and like next week, that this, you know, not only because there is a thing of it's not just about us right now, right. There is the thing that I care about of sharing stories and right. getting things out there, and if that reaches however many people it reaches, that's it's like, when I stop worrying about what's going to happen to these recordings in 100 years, or what's going to happen to those things on the wall in 100 years,
like, do you lose the ambition to do it?
Well, no, I think now it's like, okay, cool. I don't have to worry about it so much. I don't need to worry that it didn't get as many views. There was a task to do that day, and that's what like my Just Go thing is.
Yeah,
is about this step today.
Yep.
Because as soon as we start thinking about the top of the ladder, we're like, I don't know how to do that.
Well, even if
but
you
I
did,
know how to take the first step.
Even if you did know how to do the top of the ladder, even if you could make it to the top of Everest, then what?
Yeah.
So the way that I think about it is, at first, my experience had to skew me all the way to one end of the spectrum, which is none of this matters, right? Here and gone in a blank. Like even as a species, here and gone in a blank, none of this matters. But if you stay down at this end, I mean, that's basically nihilism. Like there's no point to living, you know? So it was really important to actually slingshot to the other end of the spectrum.
Right.
And the other end of the spectrum is, I see it as two things. One is just the mere presence of beauty, like the fact that we can be sitting here having this conversation, intellectualizing about these things, experiencing the taste of turmeric and ginger, and like by all odds, mathematically, like it's impossible. Not obviously not impossible, but the probability is really low. So the fact that it's all happening in this way and that we're embodied in this way is a miracle. The mere presence of being able to breathe and exhale, like that's actually one of the things I walk away from the graveyard meditation is like, I have an entire graveyard full of people envious that I can go. Yeah. As simple as being able to breathe in this moment,
yeah.
I'm separated from all of previous history, you know?
Yeah.
And although I'm standing on the shoulders of all of these giants, who knows? I might be drinking out of a thing that was invented by somebody who invented a thing that led to this. So I always share gratitude just to like say like whatever you were a part of and that you contributed to however I'm experiencing the world, thank you, right?
Yeah.
But to be able to know that I'm sitting here able to experience living, that's amazing. And that makes every single day, like as much as I can keep myself reminded of that, full and beautiful. And it minimizes a lot of this stress.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I think our responsibility and why we're human and not some other creature is we have a responsibility to manifestation. Like there is a creative force. You know it when you get into it in its flow.
Yeah.
Like you're just a meat puppet materializing the intangible world, right? We're just manifesting and creating a sense of alchemy. We're putting things into the world that did not exist before. And there is an intention behind creativity that needs to get out into the material world through us. So
we're coming from where? So jump into that because I don't want you to skip over it. Where does that come from? If we're just kind of a tool to allow these creations and creativity, and
I call it the cloud of inevitability. It's every idea that has ever existed and will ever exist just lives in ether and fragments and comes through us through conversation. Like when you think about like this, for example, this isn't an idea. That's a conversation of ideas, right?
Yeah.
Like each of these elements from plastic and glass to metal to electricity, all these things had to come together through a conversation over time where one thing as a series of steps, you know, after another, till this thing could live in whole. I just think about it as this like ethereal world where these little entities exist and they are here to like nag us until we manifest it, you know? And I don't necessarily know what it is, but I know when I feel creative and I'm tapping into imagination, I don't call it my own. I have like no ego about it whatsoever. You know, it's just my job to put it out there.
So let's get practical, because people are going to start being like, well, that's crazy. So
I hope so.
I find a lot of people that... So before I do shows, sometimes if I'm stressed out, I'm like, oh, I'm worried about this. Oh, I didn't get enough time to stretch out or something. And I'm like worried about like the tricks again. Mm. I've done this exercise where I'll try to see them. Like I'll try to peek through the curtain and see them. And I'll see them instead, because once I'm on stage, they turn into a crowd, or they're usually black, and I don't see them at all in darkness. And I'll try to see them as individuals. I'll see a person, and then I'll like have this thing of like, oh, thanks. First of all, there's like a thanks for coming to my show or the show that I'm in or whatever.
Yep.
But then there's also this thing of every person there was at like a juggling or circus or variety show for some reason. It's usually because like, you know, it's an entertainment show. They're escaping something. Not that they're trying to escape the reality or something, but like, oh, this is fun. Entertainment. Yeah. Entertainment is an escape from reality. Mm-hmm. And I try to have that flow of something. And so people will get like, there's like, I don't know why there's like such a, people will say like, I feel like especially in the entertainment world, like, no, I created this. God didn't do this, or even the universe, whatever word. Those are all the same words, or your word. Like, it's all the same. It's this thing that has power that's not us. And I really, truly believe, like, I don't have anything but I was given this ability to... It's like we're like the sprinkler on the water thing. Like we can spread this stuff out, but without water flowing through the hose, that sprinkler is useless.
I like thinking about when astronauts, you know, hearing the story of the overview effect, when an astronaut gets to into whatever sphere and then they look back and they see the Earth as a singular organism.
Right.
They all kind of experience this sensation of like, we are all a part of this organism. This organism is expressing itself. Consciousness itself is expressing itself through us. And so when I'm living consciously at this end of the spectrum, my job as a human is not to orient my life to have to climb this mountain to reach a peak. I like thinking about it as if my life is like on this mesh grid and I'm just like a singular plunger, and it's my job to just to keep plunging. Can I plunge deeper and faster, and how can I just create waves and ripples that just keep going? At the end of the day, it's just about the process. It's not about what becomes of it, because it's just going to keep seedling out in a way that we're not going to be able to see it, because it could plant in some way that leads somebody to think differently or do something differently that then causes this, and we'll never be able to see it. So it's not about us seeing our effect. It's just knowing that we're putting things out there and we're doing it because we're honoring the process. When you're talking about entertaining, you're going through the process that either allows somebody to consciously step away from things they're struggling with, or to sit there and be inspired to see what is the capacity of human potential when focused on something. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're planting a seed, but you are just honoring the process. And I think that if we just focus on the process and less about the result will take care of itself. Hmm. You know, even if it doesn't take care of itself for us or in this lifetime, which is our ego needing that thing to happen, we're trusting in that it's playing its role. And I like thinking about myself as just a sliver of consciousness in total. And the more that I experience life and doing, we're just creating more. Consciousness has its ability to learn itself and know itself through us. And that starts to get a little abstract and vague, but.
Well, the question to that is that on a, so yeah, to come back to practical, is there a fear in that thinking of like, well, I could probably just fade out and this organism can probably go on. So if there's a if there's a line of ants that are, you know, handing over whatever ants do their thing, like food. Carry the thing that they push the food over there, like that's, you know, every one of those is important, but also like not if one of them gets removed, it's okay. But it's like there is this world of individuals. So my question with that thinking is I like it because it removes the responsibility in a way. Like we still have a responsibility, but it's also this thing of like, but it's okay to fail because even if I don't build that foundation on the things that I accomplish or the awards that I get or these, the whatever it is, it's just that daily, action. And I like action. But does your thought on that come into a thing of like, well, if someone is like, well, I could just not really do anything. Yeah. The overall thing, like the astronaut's not going to see me not doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing today. Right. So I can just coast. I don't need to do it.
Yeah. So one of my... Okay, if we were to zoom all the way out and get the overview effect on the way that I understand in my little brain what life itself is as like a force, life has a singular purpose to enable and grow more life, right? It just wants to keep buzzing. It just wants to keep vibrating, wants to keep spreading. So life has a singular purpose, enable, grow more life. Everything built on top of that, we, through our stories, have called things, labeled them right or wrong, good or bad. But if you look at underneath those labels, what does it mean? Things that are bad, if I lie to you, or if I cheat you, or if I steal from you, or if I kill somebody, like these things we label bad because they diminish life, they remove life. Things that are good, if I do something to help you, if I feed you, if I smile, like all of these things that make people feel elevated in life come to life, these things we label good. Through my whole journey and getting really meta and cerebral and I guess spiritual through all of this, the term I've discovered that I am is a moral nihilist in the sense of I really don't believe in right or wrong through this lens. Mm-hmm. I don't believe there's such a thing as good or bad. And I'm bringing that up because it's a subtle shift, but it's a really important subtle shift in that I choose when I wake up in my day to serve life just because I want to serve life. Life is beautiful and I like when I feel good living, and I like when people around me feel good living and elevating and inspiring each other. Like it feels good doing those things. So I just want to serve that thing. So I'm going to wake up and just enable life, but it's my choice. If I choose not to do it, hopefully I'm at least neutral and I'm not diminishing life for somebody, creating more stress or friction or frustration or anger or resentment or whatever. I try to stay as far away from that as I possibly can. So I either have down days where I'm not going to put energy into it, or I go outside. Like some days my purpose can be literally walking down the street, just smiling at people.
Yeah.
Just because we have mirror neurons, you smile, it's going to make me smile. I feel better. Oxytocin, dopamine, like whatever is dripping in through our body now, all because we started with a smile. You've served life for the day. Where we get hung up is, was that enough? Like, I don't want to do one-to-one. I want one smile to impact a million people, you know? So then I'm really doing the work.
Yeah.
But I think where we create a lot of stress for ourselves is saying that, what is my purpose? Really, it's what do I feel aligned in myself that feels that it comes naturally to me that I can become really good at that'll serve life. But at the end of the day, you could literally just walk down the street and smile at people.
Yeah, I instantly have when I start thinking about this stuff, I like instantly have a feeling of yeah, but, and I want to come up with but and I
do. Yeah.
And I go so hard on that foundation of like yeah, but no, I want to accomplish things and I want to be busy and I want to do this work and I want to do all these things. Mm. And that is a hard thing because I know for a fact that that once you get on the Ellen show after you've been trying for 5 years, it doesn't really feel like you accomplished anything. Mm. I'm like, oh, that was cool. Now I need more. And now, yeah. And I know, I mean, and we've all heard it from people that are like have $1 billion. They're like, well, it doesn't really solve problems. I'm like, well, it solves some of your problems, but
it creates a whole new world of problems.
Right. And that's, I've hit these things of going back to those accomplishments of like, oh, I wanted to get on the Ellen show. So I tried really hard and did a lot of work to get there. And I did it. And then I was like, okay, now what? And I was like, oh, I want Guinness World Records. So I like did that. That was like a long process. Got it. Did it. Okay, now what? Everything I've done, I was like, I wanted to tour colleges with my show. And I was like, and then I did that for like a few years. Then I was like, all right, this isn't really what I love.
Yeah.
And then it was like every single thing that I've ever like tried to do. I was going to say, sure, like these things that I've tried to do, like I've gotten them. Absolutely not.
Like, so let me ask you this. Maybe outside of performing or outside or including, when is a time where you felt sustained as like, wow, that felt really good, or hearing that or seeing that or doing that just made you feel good, just like, wow, that was amazing, and it sustained itself for a bit?
Yeah, just I find those when I feel good is whenever, whether it's like a video or like a cool photo or a live show or like that, getting into that vibe of like, oh, I was connected to real thing, is like, it's either that a connection to this like thing where it's just like, I'm like, I don't know how that happened, but that was like I like blacked out on stage, or something happened, or like if I'm talking, or I get that feeling of that when I'm either just creating something. So I feel like a real, like I physically feel different if I like don't make something. And sometimes I just like, I just need to make a video. So there's like a thing, and it might be the thing of falling back on this foundation of like, I think that was like accomplishing something. Cause I like, yesterday there wasn't this video. Now today there is this video. So now I accomplished something. So I'm valuable.
Right. That's the second half of it.
Well, what if I was just valuable for smiling at people? But that's not a tangible. See, I like the tangible.
Well, but you said too that when you're making something, so there's energy in like, I get to like, when you attach yourself to something that becomes a project or something that is needed from you, it puts you to work, right? It does give you the ability to show the world and yourself, what are you capable of doing? And there's something really reinforcing about that, that gives you energy as much as it takes energy. Hopefully it gives you more than it takes. But the way that we reconcile the whole thing is when we're finished, how is that validated? But that last half has become the social construct. That's the last half that creates the discord and discontent. Like the first part is a very natural thing. Like as an organism, we seek to grow. We seek to see what we're capable of doing. You know, mastery in art is a representation of that. And that's why we can experience such the presence of beauty. You know, you go to Rome, you go to these places that you can look at what mastery looks like and you get to see the power of the artist. Like, I think that's one of the things that really stunned me, was getting to see what happens when an artist is given a platform and given the tools and given the resources and given the constraints and put them all together to create something with such the presence of beauty that like causes people to fly from all over the world to be in its presence. This is also, I think, as a little side tangent, but one that's relevant, is I think this is why, first of all, you see that the artist is exploited by the government, the corporation, and the church, is that they know the power of the artist to get people's attention, the most like lucrative resource on the planet at this point. And so to be able to get an artist to get someone's attention, and then for religion, for example, to slip in dogma because now I have your attention, or to slip in propaganda because now I have your attention, or to have you buy something because I now have your attention. This is also why I think that our system has created a offset tier of the importance of the artist. Like if people feel like they're coming out to say, parents, I'm going to be an artist, you know? Like, yeah. You tell the world you're going to be an artist, you're like, well, when are you going to get a real job? You know, yeah. It's like we have this perception that the artist is not a real thing because it keeps artists on the lower peg begging and pleading and needing, please validate me, please give me some money so I could pay my bills. When in reality, like, you're doing the work that's making these other systems possible. Yeah. So I think it's insidious personally, which is why it's more important than ever to say, like, screw that noise, need those things less, don't need the validation, don't need the resources, and just keep making things. Like, that's how you scare the hell out of systems, because they're like, they know the artist is like the most important.
Yeah.
You know?
So let's bring it back to, we'll wrap this up here in a few minutes because we doubled our,
if you're still with us,
a lot of time.
Thanks.
And so bring that back to, let's go back again, once again, bring it back to practical. So somebody that's doing there will absolutely, because I'm thinking in my brain right now, there's those, yeah, but I do need resources. And like, yeah, I'm not as interested in disrupting this system that has been in place for 500 years, thousands of years, as I am to, like, well, I want to pay rent. So something that you made a decision to be able to do that by
needing less, yep,
and actually literally just cutting your operating costs,
totally,
of life down to such a minimum, like a very minimal amount. And that's, so one thing that people are going to be like, well, yeah, but you have a $100,000 van, and then
I pay $600 a month for it.
Talked about that before. Yeah. Of, you know, like, well, that's like a pretty cheap house.
Totally.
That, yep, you can go anywhere.
It's
and
both
do
my
anything.
Car payment and house payment in one that was less than what I was paying for a car and insurance.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So if it's not that you don't need resources, it's that what do you have in your life that needs you to need resources? Why do you have those things? Reevaluate where you're spending your time and attention and energy. Start cutting costs. Start focusing on the things like, what in your life is actually serving you? It's not what is valuable. What is creating value for you? What is allowing you to do the things that you love? What is, like, if you love your own time, that was one of my biggest points of what I define as success for myself, is having autonomy with my time. Nothing in my space was giving me time, right? So, in fact, the more that I had and the more that I was beholden to meant less time. So that was one of the biggest motivators to start purging stuff and accounts and subscriptions and memberships and bills, you know, because the less that I needed to make, the more time that I had to explore, to play, to learn, to grow, to create, to connect, whatever.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that has, people are going to start thinking, if you actually listen to those things, it forces you to really.
Some people don't like looking in the mirror that way.
Right.
You know?
It's easy to push that. Well, all right. Well, maybe next year. But that's really interesting for me. When you came in, I was like, ah, sorry, there's like stuff everywhere here, and I'm just like, I am trying, like, but I do feel that attachment of like, oh, I'm like,
find
like this
friends
stuff.
Who will help you do that.
Yeah,
you know, seriously, because sometimes all of these things are a muscle, and I did not start by looking at my stuff and be like, I'm militaristically getting rid of all the stuff. Like, I had somebody come over here and like create a three-tiered system, and we did it together. And then, but once you throw a couple things in that pile, the world actually, it kind of feels good. And then to know that your stuff is going to actually go and potentially help somebody and be valuable in somebody else's life also added more of like, yeah, I would love to donate this to somebody, you know. Get in that habit though, but you have to build up that little muscle.
Yeah.
You know, start small, start audacious. Like, there's no wrong way to do it. There's no such thing as wrong. Yeah. So, you know, I do these 30-day challenges every month. And I did this one recently when Stephen Hawking passed away, the day that he passed. You know, I was just kind of reflecting on what made him so special. And it was curiosity. His ability to ask questions was so powerful that it change things, right? And I started thinking about, I mean, I love questions. I've always been a very curious person, but I've never thought about it in this way, in that I created a 30-day challenge where once a day I would set a 5-minute timer. I usually did it at the end of my day, and I'd set a 5-minute timer, and I'd use my notes or I'd notepad or whatever I had in front of me, and I would just free write questions, just question after question after question after question after question. Like, not how many questions could I come up with in 5 minutes, but my goal was, could I bring myself to ask a question that I would not even have thought to ask otherwise, that by seeing it and asking it could potentially change something. So I started visualizing this about 2 weeks through, was like, I see a question as a doorway. When you ask a question, it's like you open the doorway. Hmm. When you go on the quest, when you seek to answer that, you step through the doorway. What is on the other side of that curtain could change everything, right? And so getting into the habit of asking questions, you build up a muscle to become more inquisitive, both around like the world, around people, but internally and what's going on. And you'll start asking yourself questions of like, what is my identity? Like, what is my definition of success? Why do I own these things? Why do I drive in traffic from here to here every day? Why do I keep this person in my life who sucks energy out of me? Why do I, you know, you just start seeing things through these questions, which is the first step to having more autonomy and agency over how you choose to spend your day between dreams.
Oh, I don't even have to say anything at the end. I will tie it up in that there's our tagline. It was just the hour of to wrap it up, the between dreams. But in a really quick tie up of that is, you didn't ever, the focus on that was never, we are often focused and we have this obsession with finding the answer. What's most interesting with that is that you didn't even hint at mm-hmm. the desire to find the answer. It was just opening the door. And again, that fits in with my just go world of, and I don't talk anything about, like, in that book about like where, what the end result, like I knew I wanted things, and I talk about how I started, and that's all it is. It's literally just taking that first step, and that illustrates it well, is like you're just opening the door and taking mm-hmm. one step. You're sure there's going to be all kinds of nonsense over there, that there's going to be answers and there's going to be more questions and then there's going to be more answers, but there's going to be also a lot more doors and a lot more questions that you can walk through.
Yep, you ask the right question, truly can change everything. So discover the question.
Great. Well, that's good. Thank you for being here.
Dude, thanks for having me, man. I was looking forward to doing a follow-up from the van talk, because that, even that connecting on that, was, it pulled a lot of things forward that I hadn't consciously thought about, you know, that I got to reflect on more so afterwards. So cool. I feel like this conversation was the same.
Well, thanks to the cameras for watching and the people inside them.
People.
They're in the future. So
did
if
you
get
my small,
enjoy
by the way?
This show, thank you for listening. If you're listening on whatever podcast platform you are, we're on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, podcast app on your phone. And also, if you're only listening, you should check out the YouTube channel where you can watch, because we got cameras.
A lot of visuals, a lot of lights. We got buttons,
we got
shirts,
here,
we got everything.
And we are in the middle of launching the new t-shirts, which you can see if you're watching on YouTube. And they are probably available right now on the website. And
do you say me a small?
We have a small.
Yeah.
That is going to Kyle right now. But before, look, feel.
Oh my God.
Feel this.
What?
He didn't feel those. Feel
that.
No, feel,
look at that.
Feel
you
that,
saved
feel
the.
That.
You even printed on the inside? You guys, come on. Attention to detail. This is why we love Chris.
If you guys listening at home like the podcast and all the stuff that I've been creating, the shirts are, like, we don't want Between Dreams to feel like a clothing company, really more of like a community and a family, and wearing a shirt is like a uniform or a trophy that you get to, you're part of this and you're displaying to the world that you're part of something that's not just like, we're not selling because it's like a cool graphic. It's like part of the family of people who are making things happen and thinking about new things in a new way, walking through those doors of questions.
Yeah, man. I mean, honestly, when I see this, I don't see a t-shirt. I see a post-it note, you know, in the same way that I wear this as a post-it note, I have this as a post-it note, and that, like, this is just a way to stay conscious as to, like, what am I doing today? Like, how am I making today special? It's just a reminder, because we can only hold so many things in our conscious mind before we get cluttered, so it just kind of brings you right back to it. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks for watching and listening. Yes, guys. That's it for now. Goodbye.